If you want to make speeches, run for Senate. If you want to make changes in North Carolina, run for governor.
This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It's good to have you with us. Today, we turn our ear to North Carolina's chief executive, the governor. But we're not talking about budget proposals, vetoes, or even executive actions. Instead, we're looking at who they are. What is the typical gubernatorial profile? Are there patterns in the background, upbringing, or political composition of those who have occupied the governor's mansion during the last half century? And what might these patterns tell us about who could be chief executive moving forward?
Well, for North Carolina Democratic governors, it's been pretty much a clear pattern.
This is Gary Pierce. He served on Democratic Governor Jim Hunt's staff during the entire 16 years that Hunt held the office. Before that, Pierce was a newspaper reporter. He has written a biography on Hunt and these days has a blog on North Carolina politics. And Pierce says governors here pretty much follow the same design.
It's usually a boy, except for Purdue, who grows up in the country or in a small town. They nearly all go to Chapel Hill, UNC. They tend to be lawyers, generally go on to law school. And so they have sort of innately in their DNA the conservatism as well as an understanding of rural, small-town North Carolina. But then over that, sort of like geology, there's a layer of urban university polish, if you will, or which tends to make them more progressive, more liberal. That's proved to be a pretty powerful combination. Terry Sanford was that way. Jim Hunt was that way. Mike Easley. Bev Perdue to some, although obviously some differences. Roy Cooper clearly comes out of that same mold.
Another big thing they all have in common? They're white. And except for Bev Perdue, every governor in North Carolina's history has been a white man. This, of course, is indicative of politics in our state and much of the nation. Elected office is a sphere dominated by white men. And while you're only going to hear three white guys on this episode of the pod, we do explore when North Carolina's executive mansion may be home to someone who doesn't fit this historic mold. So the governors across the last few decades have had these small-town, rural upbringings. Meanwhile, Pierce notes that the three Republican governors from the last 50 years, Jim Holzhauser, Jim Martin, and Pat McCrory, got their start in politics in more urban areas, Watauga and Mecklenburg County, respectively. But with the way things are trending in North Carolina, that's likely to change.
You won't see it again because urban areas have become more Democratic, rural areas have become more Republican, and vice versa. You know, Democrats have become more urban, Republicans have become more rural. So there aren't any, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to name too many, let's say, legislators or county-level officials from rural areas who are Democrats to begin with. That's, you know, they're almost all Republicans. So just by definition, it has to change.
Are there any names that come to mind to kind of fit this billing, so to speak, for the future?
People tell me Robert Reeves, the new Democratic leader in the House, is somebody who has a lot of promise. But most of the names you hear just right now, there's a lot of buzz about who's going to run for Senate. Oddly enough, nobody talking about who's running for governor. I worked on a blog today about that where I said the Democrats are crazy to run for Senate. You ought to run for governor instead. But, you know, most of them, like Jeff Jackson is from Charlotte. Josh Stein from Raleigh grew up in Chapel Hill. You sort of go through them all. It's more of an urban background.
Why are Democrats better served to run for governor, as I would argue, a less powerful post in 2024 than they would be to run for a U.S. Senate in 2022?
The last line of my draft blog is that if you want to make speeches, run for Senate. If you want to make changes in North Carolina, run for governor. But your point is a good one. It's not as much fun as when you have a Democratic legislature like Hunt did. Although, for 4 years, In his last 8 years, Hunt did have a Republican House that he had to deal with.
If the cut of the kind of candidate who's going to run for governor, on the Democratic side at least, is moving to a more urban, potentially, we think. We're sitting here, we're conversing, we're not coming up with any rural Democrats. But if this is changing to a more urban Democrat, what's lost in this transition, if anything, from the sense of governance, from the sense of representation?
Well, you would say, obviously, an understanding of rural small town North Carolina doesn't have to be lost, but that's a risk. But the opposite is true. You know, we've had three Republican governors in the 20th and 21st century. Jim Holzhauser was from Watauga County, Boone, Appalachian State, which is now a solidly Democratic county. Jim Martin and Pat McCrory were both from Mecklenburg County, which are now heavily Democratic counties. So the converse would be that you're not going to have any urban Republicans. And so the obvious risk here is you're going to have, you know, one party reflecting one, not geographic part of the state, but one type of area, and the other party reflecting the other type of area. And instead of working together for the benefit of everybody, we fight each other to the detriment of everybody.
I was reminded today that in the history of our country, we have never had a black female governor. So tell me why you think North Carolina will or will not be the first state to elect a black female governor.
You know, we almost, or depending on how the recount goes, may elect a black female Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. She came within 400 votes of winning. And that would say to me, to Democrats, rather than go back and say, gee, where do we find the next person who fits the Jim Hunt, Roy Cooper mold, as much as I like that mold, what is the new mold? And why isn't it a black female? Why isn't it a Natalie Murdoch from Durham? I think that's where Democrats do have to look.
As for that Chief Justice recount, the race did not turn for Beasley. Republican Paul Newby is the winner of that incredibly close outcome. But when it comes to executives, is Pierce right? Is Cooper the last to fit this mold for a North Carolina governor?
Roy Cooper is the bridge that connects what was a sort of red state to the future of a blue state.
Morgan Jackson is the co-founder of Nexus Strategies. He has worked on many Democratic campaigns and has long been an advisor to Roy Cooper. So it's no big surprise that he thinks Cooper isn't the end of any road for Democrats. But Jackson does admit that the state is changing, and both Republicans and Democrats will have to adapt.
Now, the question is, how quickly do we get to a blue state with the urbanization? I have long believed that North Carolina is headed the direction of Virginia. You know, just a few years ago, Virginia was a very solidly red state. And you had Democrats like Mark Warner, you'll remember when he was running for governor in 2001, I believe it was, had a country music theme song and sponsored a NASCAR and spent all of his time in Southwest Virginia trying to break into really red areas so that he could be successful. What has happened over the last 10, 15 years is that the Northern Virginia side of the equation, Virginia, has gotten so large and so blue that it really doesn't matter what happens to the rest of the state because it's so big. I think North Carolina is headed towards that tipping point. We're obviously not there yet, but we've got Raleigh and Charlotte together that are combining. And in the next 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to have a place where Raleigh and Charlotte are almost one large urban area that are connected by a lot of different ways. And I think when that time comes, it gets really challenging for Republicans, especially given their structural deficit with college-educated voters. And I think, you know, you ask any Republican and they'll consult it and they'll tell you the same thing. That is the thing they're most concerned about for the future is not their hold on the rural part of North Carolina. That's not going to change. The rural areas are not getting bigger. They're getting smaller. And as the urban areas get bigger, they're more and more populated by college-educated voters. And that's an inherent advantage that Democrats have long term.
I feel like the word I've heard is megalopolis.
I don't know if that's the word you were looking for. Listen, that'll work. We'll call it.
I've heard that the demographers use that word. Okay, so let me go back to the bridge analogy real quick. So if it's Terry Sanford and Mike Easley and Jim Hunt that are behind us being North Carolinians, or at least, you know, the Democrats on this North Carolina bridge, and they're going over the bridge, who's on the other side? If Roy Cooper's the bridge, who are these candidates of the future in your eyes?
These candidates of the future are Josh Stein. They're Anthony Fox, the former mayor of Charlotte, who obviously has taken a turn. Was in the Obama administration, then is working nationally with Lyft. But he's a guy who has a bright electoral future and one that is in North Carolina. I think really what you're talking about, and there are a lot of future candidates that would fall into this dynamic, is I think when I'm talking about the bridge to the future, The 20th century has largely been dominated by Democratic politicians that could do well in Eastern North Carolina, that could do well in rural North Carolina. A lot of them were from Eastern North Carolina, products of tobacco farms, products of agriculture in general, close connection to agriculture. And I think what you're going to see is with urbanization, you're going to find more and more candidates that are going to come from Raleigh. They're going to come from Charlotte. And I think as far as running for governor, that is. And it's not just Jeff's the structural advantage of population and name ID. It's the ability to raise the money in the primary. Is that overwhelmingly the contributions that come into a Democratic candidate. And honestly, the same thing's true for Republican candidates. The money's coming from the urban areas because that's where the jobs are. That's where the opportunity. And frankly, that's where the wealth is. And so a candidate that comes out of a Raleigh, that comes out of a Charlotte, comes out of a Durham, a Chapel Hill, a Greensboro, Winston-Salem, has a leg up.
Are the days of gubernatorial candidates campaigning, by and large, in almost all, if not all, 100 counties, and trying to straddle the middle, trying to, you know, reach the agricultural needs of the coastal plains, some of the wants of the mountains, are those days, I don't want to say going by the wayside, that's a little dramatic, but are those factors lessening as we talk about the urban Democrat?
They are. I'll tell you, when you're governor for all 100 counties, and you see Governor Cooper traveling the state pre-COVID, of course, but going to very small rural red counties. You see him spend a lot of time in large urban counties, and you have to be the governor for all of the state. But as a candidate, the smart player for the candidates, you got to go where the votes are. And when you're running for office for the United States Senate, when you're running for office for governor, you only have there's a finite amount of time. And I think what you continue to see is candidates do move around in urban areas. I'll tell you, in the Senate race this time, Cal Cunningham went to, I think it was 80 or 90 counties over the 18 months or 2 years. It was a lot of counties traveling to listen to people and hear people. I think it is very important that North Carolina doesn't lose its rural foundation and the way people think about it. And what I mean about that is policies can't benefit just one area of the state. For the state to be successful, they've got to benefit all of it. So you may not have to be from a rural area, but what you need to do is be able to understand some of the challenges. You know, you look at hurricanes, you look at economic, the support of the community college system, which is so huge in driving jobs in rural areas and getting folks educated who may not be able to go to a university or who may live too far away. And so I think you've got to have a really strong understanding of that. That's what made Jim Hunt, Roy Cooper, Mike Easley, Terry Sanford so successful is their connection, not only to be able to speak to the folks in the urban areas, but the rural areas. I don't think that's going to go away regardless of the candidates. I just think you start out with candidates that are in urban areas.
Pop quiz for you. Do you know how many black women have served as governors in the United States in history?
I think none, maybe.
That is the correct answer.
Yeah, I think is U.S. Senate, is it is two or three? Three?
It's three, yeah. So a question I posed to Gary, and I'm going to paraphrase here and offer it to you in the same way, is tell me why North Carolina is ripe to be the first state to elect a black woman as governor, or why, in your professional opinion, North Carolina is very unlikely to be that first state.
Listen, I think you got to have the right candidate. First and foremost, candidates do matter. And you got to have the right dynamic where someone can put together the kind of effort and raise the kind of money. And there's no difference between an African-American female and a white male. at that point, in my opinion, the fundamental things. I look at people like Representative Sidney Batch, who was unsuccessful in election, but I can tell you right now, there is no doubt in my mind that Sidney Batch could be governor one day. She could be United States Senator one day. She is a really, really impressive candidate. You know, this election cycle was very challenging. She was in one of the only two Democratic held districts in the state that under the redraw got more Republican, and it was a close election 18. But so I got to tell you, it depends on the candidate. And I think when I think about people like Sidney Batch, Sidney's got an incredibly, incredibly bright future. And I could see her running statewide and see her winning big. I think there are people like Jessica Holmes, who ran a good race this time, obviously was the first ever African-American female chair of the Wake County Commission. Got a very bright future. And there are a lot of folks, there are a lot of candidates that are coming up that are on the bench that may have an opportunity to do something a lot greater at some point.
Obviously, you and I have had a tilt to the left here in this conversation. You are a Democratic operative, Democratic strategist. Tell me the first three names that come to mind when I say, let's make a wager on who is going to have the Republican nomination for governor in 2024.
You know, I think Republicans, it's going to be interesting. I think, first of all, they've got to get through the 2022 U.S. Senate race, which seems like it may turn into a cattle call of Republicans that, you know, or an elephant march of folks that, you know, from Laura Trump to Mark Walker to Pat McCrory to the Wilkie, the Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary. I think you're going to have a lot of folks. And part of it is, Jeff, is because you got to remember, 2022 is the first open seat, truly open seat for the United States Senate we've had in North Carolina since 2004. And nobody in either party is going to give anybody a pass because you just don't get opportunities like this. And so I think you're going to have a lot of folks that on the Republican side that go for that. I think in 2024, you've got to look at somebody like Mark Robertson, who is lieutenant governor. I don't know what his future holds or what he's thinking about, but I can tell you folks like that will certainly give real thought to running for governor. Some of the folks who may have run in 2022 and were unsuccessful may think about it. You've got a congressional delegation full of Republicans that I think would like to do something bigger than Congress, and it's about finding the right opportunity. I don't know if Dan Forrest is done with politics or he's going to try to make another run in 4 years. We've seen that from different times. I mean, McCrory is an example of that, who, regardless of how many times McCrory loses, he continues to float his name for whatever's next opening. So, you know, we'll see.
Indeed, we will see. And listen, too. The field of candidates for the 2022 U.S. Senate race is only now beginning to take shape. The 2024 gubernatorial contest is a long way away. What we do know for certain is that Roy Cooper will not run again. He's term limited. This episode was constructed by Charlie Shelton Ormond. It's been great to have him helping out in production of the pod these past few months. The WUNC Politics Podcast finds your feeds Tuesdays and Fridays. Do us a favor, please, during this season of giving, pass along the podcast to someone in your orbit who would benefit, dare I say enjoy, a little more context on state political happenings. On Friday, Aisha Dew and Clark Reamer swing by for a discussion of the week's news. As always, thanks for listening. My name is Jeff Tiberi.